ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. This month, YPulse, the leading authority on Gen Z and millennial opinions and behaviors, released a report on how COVID-19 has affected young consumers' views on love and relationships. Mary Lee Bliss, YPulse's VP of Content, is here to discuss what YPulse's research can tell us. Mary Lee, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm really looking forward to digging into the detail of YPulse's study on love post-COVID, although given where things are right now, mid-COVID. Before we jump into the study, can you give us the top line about the population you survey, margin of error, things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So YPulse is a leading authority on youth. We study Gen Z and millennials day in and day out, surveying them across a variety of topics, from their behavior to the trends they're driving to their brand affinity. And we look at 13 to 39 year olds in the US. Every one of our trend and behavioral surveys is among 1,000 13 to 39 year olds and is nationally representative. There's a small margin of error, you know, around 3% for that base size. So you're really looking at a very accurate account of how young people are feeling about the big trends that really they're creating and growing.
That's awesome. Thanks so much. So in Hollywood, when you're pitching a show, you usually take comparable items that development people understand and you mash them up to understand what the idea is all about. So for this study, we're saying young love meets pandemic. And really, how do people date when you aren't supposed to get closer than 6 feet? And if you do, you have to wear a mask that covers the bottom half of your face.
Sure.
So give us the lay of the land.
I mean, dating during a pandemic, you know, people have not really ever done that, because back in the old pandemics, there wasn't dating. So this is completely uncharted territory for Gen Z and millennials. You know, many millennials are still single, about half. So, you know, we have a lot of young people who are uncoupled and needing to figure this out for the first time ever. And man, it's not fun for them. You know, there's been a lot of meet cute stories on social media and, you know, even some, you know, dating shows and content that are, you know, about finding love in the pandemic. And it's all, you know, a nice fairy tale, but for the most part,
the exception, you know, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The exception. And we found that it's been really hard for young single people during this time.
So dating apps, have you seen an actual uptick in their use?
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's not too surprising. All digital media has seen an uptick. Social media saw a surge in use. Of course, streaming services that have, you know, not only helped stave off boredom, but also bound us together with common, you know, culture to talk about. And dating apps as well. But what's interesting is, you know, it wasn't all dating apps. You know, some of the use stayed steady. But what we saw was a difference in how they are actually using dating apps or why. And there was really this narrative that young people were, you know, glued to dating apps, were swiping to try to find someone desperately, you know, to quarantine with, to spend this time, you know, to cuff with. And we really found that young people instead have been using dating apps more as entertainment and just to have a connection with anyone, to, you know, just talk, and to, you know, just like streaming services, just to pass the time, and even find new friends.
That's interesting. I mean, have any apps in particular thrived because they're more socially distant friendly, that they have built in video functions or things like that? Have you seen any shifts in who the forerunners are?
You know, a lot of apps really pivoted quickly to add video capabilities during this time. So Hinge is one that added a date from home tool to let users know you like would get a text whether someone they're messaging was ready to have a video chat date. We saw definitely that Hinge uses increased during this time. So yeah, I think those apps that figured out that really early on that they would need to change things up, did see some increases in use.
What about, I mean, some were notorious for being hookup apps, you know, and if you can't hook up, did those successfully pivot to, you know, friends searching, you know, to different use cases, if you will, or did they somewhat, although they went up, they didn't go up as quickly or as
successfully as others. Yeah, I would say that's accurate, that some of the ones that had the reputation for, you know, being those meetup rather than the dating, were, you know, saw more steady use as opposed to big increases.
Now, broadly speaking, and also, I guess, with the use of the apps, how durable do you think some of these changes are going to be? That is anything going to linger as social restrictions drop? And are any of them going to stay on even for the long haul?
It's a great question. You know, early on, we thought, okay, you know, maybe this will change dating for good.
Right.
Of course, we didn't know how long this was all going to last.
And nobody connects.
Nobody ever. But we, you know, I think that there are some elements that could absolutely stay. You know, I think it's convenient to have a video chat first before you meet someone and see if, you know, that chemistry is there even.
Well, also to see if they look like their photo. I mean, it gets you can't lie, you know, you're test driving. You know, obviously you can't see how tall they are, but you can certainly see if that athletic build is truly athletic.
Yeah, I've watched enough episodes of Catfish to know that, you know, you need to get those people on a video chat. So I think that could stick around, but ultimately, young people still want in-person dating and it's just not the same. It's a great way to find the person, to meet up with in person. Right? But you know, the majority of single, millennials, 57% say a virtual video date's not a real date. And you know, they really want to meet people in person, if they're going to be dating them, which, you know, of course that's human. human.
Right. What about looking at existing relationships or relationships that had just started, you know, as the pandemic hit? What's been the impact on them?
Well, it was interesting, you know, going in, you could hypothesize that spending all this time together in quarantine, couples might be getting a little tired. Yeah. We have seen, lots of stories online about, you know, getting tired of your significant other, you know, fighting a lot, celebrity couples who said they had to go back into therapy, you know, which of course, totally understandable. I was actually very surprised by the data that millennials in significant committed relationships were far more likely to tell us that this has made them stronger, that their relationship with their significant other has become stronger as opposed to damaged or unchanged. And the majority, 84%, told us that they feel very lucky to be in a relationship during quarantine and COVID-19, which is, you know, that makes sense to have someone to share this all with. So really we saw that it's actually brought a lot of young couples closer together, and also more focused on strengthening their relationships. Maybe, you know, spending all this time together, you are seeing some of the things you need to work on, but overall we saw that it's not something that's tearing them apart, but actually something that they now want to work on.
That's interesting. I think I had read about the millennial generation being less connected and committed to intimate relationships than previous generations. And certainly your just description of them as being uncoupled. That felt like something that I had read previous before this even had happened.
Right.
First of all, is that true? Were they as a generation pre-pandemic, you know, getting married later than previous generations? And if so, has it been exacerbated, do you think, by this?
Yeah, so we explored this pre-pandemic in a trend we called extended singledom. Mm-hmm. And absolutely, millennials have delayed marriage. That, you know, that's undeniable. Mm-hmm. And what we really saw just looking at rates of marriage and how long people stay single now versus previous generations is that millennials have created this extended singledom period, really from their mid-20s to their mid-30s. They're, you know, not a huge uptick of them are getting married. So, you know, about 40% remain single between their 25 to 35 range. You know, there is a large amount who do, you know, find someone in those early 20s and have a committed relationship. But this extended singledom that millennials have really kind of pioneered, because, and we just talked about this in another trend as well, our life plannings and milestones, life plans rewritten trend. You know, they have been a generation that chooses the milestones that they're going to take when they want to take them. And they also, you know, haven't necessarily followed the path of previous generations for other reasons as well. You know, financially, you know, this is a generation that wants to have their finances in order maybe before they get, they find the one. So, you know, their priorities are different. And so absolutely, they're less likely to be married at the same ages that, that older generations were. That being said, it's not that they have rejected marriage.
Interesting.
Yeah, we overall see that it's still a life goal for the majority of both millennials and Gen Z. So it's just that they're not going to do it, you know, in their the time frame that older generations did, just because that's what you're quote unquote supposed to do.
Well, what's interesting about that, and we can hop to that. I have some questions around sort of brand impact. Mm. But with those things, with marriage being delayed, you then have other life phases being delayed. You know, there's biology and childbirth and how many children can you have, and what does that mean, and what's the societal impact of that? But let's, before we get to that, and I do want to get to that. You know, obviously the millennials, I guess it's the millennials who we're really talking about there. But what about Gen Z? And these are the people who are just starting to enter adolescence and all of the messy, angsty young love stuff. And what are you seeing there? And how is it tracking vis-a-vis how millennials, when they were this age, were behaving?
Yeah, I mean, Gen Z, you know, for our Y Pulse's definition, the oldest edge of them is turning 20 this year. Right. So, you know, really entering that older adult dating for the first time. We definitely see that they are different from previous generations. You know, every generation forges their own path. I think they'll be just as likely, if not more likely, than millennials to choose those milestones when they're ready for them and when they want to do them, as opposed to, you know, a prescribed path that, you know, previous generations might have followed. So certainly, I think, though marriage is an ultimate goal, is something that they want in the end, they will delay those things as well. And in the path there, in the dating, they are going to be really different. You know, sexual identity is one of the things that we've continuously seen for Gen Z. It's far more fluid, far less binary. They're more likely by far than millennials to say that they are bisexual. 15% of Gen Z say that they're bisexual versus 9% of millennials.
Wow.
And, you know, they're also just less likely to define themselves as straight. You know, so we see, you know, and they also are, you know, passionate about LGBTQ plus causes and, you know, want to fight discrimination about that. And they are more likely to feel passionately about that than older generations as well. So, you know, you see really interesting things with Gen Z, like young celebrities coming out at a an age that previous generations would never have imagined would have been possible. Jojo Siwa is a recent example, you know, a huge, huge star on social media, started off on Dance Moms. And really, you know, to young kids, right. She really is a star for young kids, even though she herself is 17. And she just in the last few weeks came out and had this huge outpouring of acceptance and positivity overall from her fans. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, that is one thing that changes things for Gen Z. That they'll be more open about those things, want that to be a conversation, want acceptance to be moved forward even further than it is now. We also see that, you know, they're passionate about causes as a generation. They're passionate about change and making change, being activists, and that will impact the kinds of people that they date, their openness to dating people outside their race, for example, but also, you know, having conversations about the causes that matter to them be a part of their dating lives, you know, and, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if as Gen Z, you know, more and more uses the apps that we were talking about earlier, if, you know, those kinds of things,
filter criteria,
filter criteria for sure, become more common.
That's really interesting. What about the pandemic in specific? Because are they in-person meeting more than their older counterparts? You know, because some kids, or I say kids, but you know, that that 13 to 20 range, you have in some schools, you know, hybrid education. So you can actually see people. And then, you know, college students who don't follow anybody's instructions and socialize anyway. So are they perhaps the only group that is still in-personing their lives, or are they too being restrained?
Yeah, we actually asked, you know, for those who are single and dating, because a significant number of young single people are single and not looking to date. Right. But for those who are currently dating, we asked if they are using dating apps and sites, exclusively dating exclusively in person or doing a mix of both. And absolutely Gen Z teens, 13 to 19 year olds, are far more likely to say that they are dating exclusively in person. It's 52% actually. And the reason why is exactly what you're saying. They're still in school. They can still see their significant others without having to, you know, arrange meetups outside of, you know, quarantine homes. You know, it's part of their natural lives. When we look at, though, college students, it's actually far, far less. So, you know, only a third of college students say that they're dating exclusively in person, and 37% say that they're using dating apps and sites, which is far more in line with what millennials are currently doing.
Right. Okay. So we've covered how young consumers are experiencing love and relationships. Now let's cover a bit of the so what. So what does this mean for brands? How can a brand leverage these insights, be it an entertainment brand or a CPG brand? What does this mean?
Yeah. I mean, when you're, first of all, I think there's really a lot of opportunities for those young couples that are quarantined together and actually not at each other's throats as much as we thought, but wanting to spend time with their significant other. But just like all of us, whether you're a Gen Z, a millennial, an X or a boomer, you know, the day in, day out of quarantine, it wears and it's, you know, it's gets a little boring. So I think, you know, we definitely saw and asked millennials who are in partnerships what they might want in terms of not just date night experiences, but, you know, maybe as things that brands could provide. And we saw that the majority, 85%, would love ideas to have fun date nights at home. So, you know, any brand, really, honestly, you don't have to be a CPG, you know, brand or a booze brand, or you can really be a gaming brand, anything can really provide.
So it's really about their messaging. You mean, so if they,
absolutely,
if they craft something against this white space, people, there is a market there.
There is. The people who are looking for ideas on how to spend time together in a fun, different way. And, you know, I think Valentine's Day is this, you know, coming weekend, and it's going to be very different. We surveyed young consumers about that. And the majority, of course, are going to be spending that time at home, mm-hmm. As opposed to going out to a restaurant or a bar. So, you know, that's one opportunity that's coming up fast, but it's more prolonged than that. Then in terms of young singles, I think one thing that brands should really remember, and media brands too, is that, as I mentioned, there's a large number of young singles who just aren't looking to date and aren't prioritizing it right now. You know, one thing we didn't really talk about yet is that because dating during the pandemic is so hard, so many have just opted out. And right. They're just waiting, and finding love just isn't their priority for now. So stories about young people who aren't looking for love, because, you know, that's so often the narrative, right? But we see, you know, really clearly that many are making themselves the priority or their careers. We saw that in extended singledom, and we absolutely see that continuing. I think there are those cute, you know, meet cute stories of young people who did find love in the pandemic. And I don't think that young people are, you know, are rejecting those. They enjoy them. Of course, we all do. They're right. Adorable and wholesome and pure. But there's also a lot of messiness to dating in the pandemic that I think, you know, really hasn't necessarily been portrayed or covered yet. You know, do you wear a face mask on a date? You know, do you have to, you know, figure out a date while socially distancing? I think, you know, that could be something that brands could provide ideas for as well. You know, I could see even like a fast food brand coming up with ideas for how to visit together and have like social distance, like a Sonic, you know, social distance dating, or, you know, have spots that are 6 feet apart. Brands have gotten really creative about social distance marketing during this time. We've covered that quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And I think specifically targeting, you know, young singles who are trying to date, or just want to do those things with their friends, would be, you know, really smart.
Wow. Well, this has been great. And I think everyone will find this information so valuable. Thank you so much for sharing it with us
today. Absolutely. Thank you.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next. I'd like to close by thanking my production team at Up Next, my friend Rob Naughton, the voice artist who recorded our open, and of course, all of you, the members of our audience. Thank you. I'll be talking to you again next time, right here on Up Next.